It's DJ Double here, and today I'm sat down with the ghetto Lenny Kravitz himself. I've got St. John in the building.
What's up, bro?
Welcome, bro. How's things, man? How was the journey over?
It was smooth. Late night, early mornings. I'm used to it, though.
Used to the grind.
Yeah,
literally
I'm used
fresh
to
off the plane as well.
Fresh off the plane. I've been here for like 3 hours.
Yeah. So I want to start today with like what I probably think is possibly the most impactful question you've ever been asked in your career.
Okay.
Do you want to rap or do you want to make $1 million?
I want to rap.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now I could answer that differently.
Okay.
I want to rap.
I'm glad you answered it that way because obviously like that's the key question that you were asked that transitioned you from an underground rapper into like a music industry figure, somebody's songwriting. Mm-hmm. And I guess at the time, your answer was you wanted to make $1 million.
Yeah, because it was a specific question. Mm-hmm. So if you take it out of context, somebody will be confused. I was making music and then I met a music industry executive at the time. And he asked me a question no one had ever asked me because I'd never had that opportunity before. I never had the opportunity to make any money, anything like that.
Yeah.
So he said, yo, you did this one. Have you done this one, though? So he asked, you want to rap or you want to make $1 million? And I knew I'd rap before,
but
I never made a dime, and I wanted to change my life. So I said, I want to make $1 million. I want to do the thing that I'm passionate about. I want to do the thing that I give a fuck about.
Yeah.
If I don't give a fuck about it. Listen, money comes, money goes, right?
Uh-huh.
That's a fact. That's an absolute.
Yeah.
Even if you don't got a dollar, even if you sitting out there and like you don't got a dollar to your name, one known fact is it will come and it will go, right? You got to spend it to make it. And sometimes you make it and you got to spend it.
Yeah.
But the thing that you're passionate about, that you're a slave to, like that's not going to change unless you change passions.
Yeah.
And be passionate about something else.
Real talk right there, bro. I've never really like understood the process and the journey of a songwriter. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed a lot of people that have transitioned from songwriters into successful artists. So I understand that transition. What happens when someone like Zach Katz says to you like, right, you're a dope artist, but you have an opportunity to write for artists. Can you explain to me the process you went through there and what the job was like, what the sessions were like and stuff like that as a songwriter?
Well, when you get asked that question, it's just a question and it's just something cool. It's just a bulletin point in my story that I remember. It's just a page, a bookmark on a page that I remember specifically. But everything changed from that point. So I then started writing music for other people. And I wasn't successful at it. I'm not even sure I was good at it. But I started. And it was the thing that got me to start, that question. Because I'd written a song for a friend, and he'd heard it, and he asked me when I met him, my first time in L.A., if I wanted to rap and make $1 million. And what about that, he was saying, you want to try something you haven't tried and see how great you can be. And I wanted to try that. So the process between then and now, you write a lot of bad songs.
Mm-hmm.
You miss a lot.
Right.
You take every possible shot you can get and you prepare for the shot that you're going to make sometime in a distant future.
Yeah.
A lot of years in between then, that day, and this day. And like a lot of sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
To answer the question more specifically, you start writing the records and then you hope that it lands somewhere. And you've interviewed a lot of songwriters, so you've seen people write songs that nobody's heard. You've seen people write songs that they sat on for a while, years. And then finally became something, right? You've heard that story. I'm not the first person to say it, right?
It's a very thankless job.
Yeah, like, because you don't get to stand in front of the camera. It might be your words, it might be your ideas, but they don't applaud for you when it gets heard.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably the hardest part for most songwriters.
Yeah.
Because they do it because they love it, but they want to be recognized for the thing that they love.
That's the thing. I was going to say, like, so many fans of the music will never realize like massive stars like Beyonce, for example, or Chris Brown don't write some of their biggest hits. But then
it's a collaborative process for a lot of people.
So how did you find it as the songwriter? And then like in terms of breaking out and building a fan base as a songwriter, I feel like it's almost impossible.
Look, I sign up for the jobs that I'm willing to do.
Right.
So you ask me this question and you ask someone else, they'll give you a different answer.
Got you.
If I sign up to be the janitor, I'm going to be the incredible janitor, the best version of that I can be. Even if I want to be the varsity quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm not going to think I'm supposed to be there just because I want to be there.
Uh-huh.
My work is going to tell that story. So when I started writing songs for other people, it wasn't difficult for me not being the person applauded. It was difficult trying to communicate my idea.
Right, got you.
That it was the ideas. Like, I was living behind the songs and I was okay with it. I would have been okay continuing with it if I felt like my ideas were executed the way I imagined them. No one can sing my songs the way that I imagine them in my head.
Right. Yeah.
And for me, that's the idea, and that's worthwhile. Just the execution of it.
Yeah. So, which is why I guess being your own artist now is, it's just ideal. You write your own stuff.
Yeah,
and
it's
do
ideal.
It the way you want to do it.
Yeah, it's less compromises that you have to make with yourself.
Uh huh. Amazing. Have you used any like rejected songs for your own catalog?
Yeah. Roses.
Oh, Roses.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
You wanna actually? I wrote Roses for Beyonce.
Right. Okay.
For whatever reason, it never happened. It never made. Maybe it wasn't good. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But look, it's my record.
Yeah. I feel like that song in particular has become quite a like standout block in your path as well. Like that seems to be a real standout tune for a lot of people. Yeah, they gravitate to that one in particular.
That's an important page in my story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Even in my sound and the things that I want to articulate, it's a really great hybrid for what I'm, you can tell what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
You can hear it all at the same time. And that started off as a song that from what I'd understood, they were working on a Beyonce album and they needed some records that were in a direction with new ideas. And that's how I thought of it. I imagine, yo, what if Beyonce did this? This would be amazing.
Yeah.
Here, Matt, Roses. That's how I thought. I thought it would be so progressive. It didn't go.
Uh-huh.
I did it myself.
What point did you realize that the music's really taking off for you now? Like, and it's this is the full-time job, as it were.
Right now, when I just landed from a plane.
When you found out you're going to be on DJ Double TV.
Yeah. Think about
Mom,
it.
Mom, I've made it.
When I just landed from on a plane from New York. I just did my listening session in New York. I'm sitting on a couch in a place that I've never been. And I'm wearing a collection of clothes that I made for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And some Nikes that I probably couldn't afford 4 years ago.
Right.
That's when I knew.
Yeah. So it's just happening. It's just unraveling now in front of you.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
How does it look like it feels?
Looks like it feels good, man.
Yeah.
I read that growing up, you divided your time between Brooklyn, New York, and Guyana. As a kid, did they seem like two different worlds? Because if you look at the two places as an adult, like, I mean, Brooklyn's obviously in a developed country, a lot of big, tall buildings. Guyana, I've never been, but it's a third world country from what I know. So yeah. I imagine it's a very poor area. Like, were you aware of the differences between the two areas?
Yeah, I know. Even as a kid, I know. Mm-hmm. There's poor and there's sub-poor. I don't know if sub-poor is a real thing, but there's the ground floor, right? So coming from America, being from Brooklyn, being from New York, being from East New York, Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
We were poor. We ain't had no money.
Yeah.
My mom worked as a nurse's aide. Lots of kids. No resources. Pops ain't in the picture. Other family members aren't there to play supportive role. She saved up her coins and sent us back to Guyana.
Right.
Poor was government assistance, food stamps, WIC checks. Like, you know, in America, we get that. If you're really poor, you can apply for that. You got to go through some rigorous processes, but you'll get some,
Ultimately, it's paperwork and then you just
Yeah. Right? You'll get some support, right? There's none of that in Guyana. It doesn't exist in a third world country. There's no infrastructure that allows you to get slightly a leg up, slightly being a competitive, be able to feed yourself, house yourself, give your kids some bread. There's no option like that. So in America, we ain't have nothing and we were poor. And in Guyana, we ain't have nothing and we were sub-poor.
Right.
Because there was no opportunity. You really had to create it for yourself. You
literally had to survive.
There's no system.
Right.
Right. In America, you get food stamps and in Guyana, you got to sell mangoes. Or you got to cut down sugarcane, or you got to figure out whatever your hustle is.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what was your education like?
I didn't go to school. I graduated high school. That's not even of course. I'm saying that like that's a guaranteed thing.
Right.
Well, like all I know is guys that didn't go to school, dropped out of school, and sold drugs. All I know, those are the things that were familiar to me.
Yeah.
I'm articulate because my mom forced me to read.
She forced you to read.
She forced me to read when I was in junior high school. Right before I went into high school, we had a summer where she would sort of force us to read. And I credit it to her. I didn't develop a skill set of reading beyond that.
Right.
but I developed the skill set of curiosity.
Okay. For me, that's one thing that really does stand out about you. Like, I feel like you're a lot more articulate than a lot of other rappers that I come across.
Yeah, I think whatever you want to be, you're going to end up being, because that's where you're going to put the time.
Before we talk about the new project, one thing I want to highlight about you is the fire in the booth that you did last time you were here. Now, it was actual freestyling. How much of it was made up on the spot?
Almost all of it.
Right. That's a lost art, because it was good. Mm-hmm. I've heard people do it before and it's like, okay, cool. You can make it rhyme, but it doesn't make sense and it's not good. It's just you're making it rhyme. But yours was actually good and made up on the spot. Like, these days, that is such a lost art form in music. Freestyle just means doing someone else's tune differently or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Usually.
So like, do you do a lot of that freestyling?
When I'm making music, when I'm recording music, it's a thoughtless process for me, where when I walk into a booth, I just know what I believe.
Right, okay.
I have no idea what I'm going to say. I just know what I believe. Like, I think I hear a beat and I hear instruments or chords or drums, and I won't hesitate. I'll say, cool, turn the mic on, I'm ready.
And you know what to do.
I know what I believe.
Right.
I don't know how, what that sound like to anybody else listening. I just know what the fuck I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in and I go in a booth, and fortunately, because I believe with such conviction, at this point, as long as it's true, it ends up sounding the way I would want it to sound.
Right, got you.
Of course, everybody misses, but the difference between the people who are the pros and the people who are not, less misses.
Yeah. That's sick. Doing that freestyle in particular, like, that's the biggest rap freestyle platform in the world.
Pretty
Did you
cool.
feel any kind of risk going in there, like, unprepared, like, without anything pre-written?
No, listen, to be transparent with you, I was outside for maybe like 15 minutes thinking about what I wanted to do, and then I was like, what's it matter?
Right.
It's about to happen anyway,
nice.
Right? Biggs is like, yo, fam, just do what you do anyway.
Yeah.
I was like, cool, and I just went in and did what I do
people
anyway.
People spent like months preparing their fire in the booth, and you came in and
you know what?
Like
they should.
Yeah.
They should.
So, Ghetto Lenny's Love Songs is just around the corner.
Yeah.
August 23rd.
Fly in my face.
August 23rd.
August 23rd.
The original title was slightly different.
It was originally Ghetto Lenny's Love Songs for Christians.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the religious aspect of your music, like, I'm slightly confused about, like, your stance on religion, because taking the Roses video, for example, and, like, some of the merchandise, so you have the Christian Sex Club,
mm-hmm.
and, like, some of the visuals on the merchandise, I feel like some Christians would be like, nah, this is blasphemous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then your name is Saint John,
real name,
and then when I was reading about you, your mum's a preacher,
yeah.
So I imagine you grew up in a Christian household or a Catholic household, so you went to church as a youngster,
yeah,
right?
A so lot. Like,
there seems to be like a conflict. Is he a Christian, or is he like against Christianity? What is your stance on religion in your music?
Ain't that interesting? You said there seems to be a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you asked a lot of people that question, you'd probably come out with the same result. There seems to be a conflict.
Right.
I mean, we live in a real world.
Uh-huh.
We live here on this planet, in this time, with our own desires and our own passions.
Yeah.
And I've never really stated or overstated my personal beliefs.
Right.
So if you see a conflict, then there's a conflict. I come from an extremely religious background. My real name is Saint John.
Yeah.
My mom's a preacher, and I live on this planet, and I am who I am. All I'm doing is exploring the things that I'm thinking or trying to
right.
manifest, or I'm trying to work out in uh-huh. real time, and you're seeing it in real time. So I'm telling you my opinions, my beliefs, my confusions, my uncertainties, my doubts. All of it you get to hear through my music.
Yeah.
But in real time, if there's a conflict for me, the conflict just exists, period. You might just hear me being the first person talking about the conflict.
Right. Has your mum got an opinion on, like...
My mom loves me.
Especially what... But what I mean is, like, in terms of, like, the merchandise side of it. Does she... Is she, like... Has she seen it, and has she ever...
Yeah, she sees the clothes. She never says anything.
No.
No, because it's art.
Right.
It's expression. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not saying anything outwardly offensive in any particular way, I'm not overstating anything... Are falsely claiming anything. Just all cool. You see the words Christian Sex Club on a shirt.
Right.
Does that bother you?
Doesn't bother me personally.
Just, I'm saying,
but I know it would bother some people. That's all I'm saying.
Like, take the position of somebody who's hyper-religious.
Mm-hmm.
The three words.
Yeah.
That's interesting. None of them are lies.
Mm-hmm.
They're just three words.
Yeah.
It shows you how overly possessive or sometimes unnecessarily passionate people are about things that they don't have enough information on.
Right.
It's just three words.
Yeah.
Christian sex club. No lies. No statements. Three words on a shirt.
Just three words. It's a name.
You can take what you want from it. You can put what you want into it. But you got to do something.
Right.
It's not one of those things you see and you pass by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe in taking action.
It's thought-provoking.
I like that. I want to live in that space.
And, of course, started the conversation, yeah. Which means we're plugging the merchandise.
That's all I ever want to do is start a conversation.
How financially stable are you now? Because I've heard you speaking about being homeless in the past as well. So, like, obviously, I mean, you've got your own merch. Things are moving now. You're an international star. So I'm guessing that you're good.
I invest everything back into all the things I believe.
Right, okay.
I'm good because I'm in an incredibly healthy space.
Right.
Where all I'm doing is dreaming out loud and building all the things that I'm dreaming.
Hmm.
Other people want to get rich. I want to leave an incredible, indelible mark.
Yeah.
That's going to come with the riches. It's going to come with money. But I ain't doing it for that. Mm-hmm. That's not the point.
It's like you said, money comes and goes.
It comes and goes. If a statue's left standing after I was here, and people respect it because I did something with my time here, then I did something. And that's cool.
There's a lot of musicians and a lot of artists that get stuck in this kind of gray area where it's like they're making the music, but they're not making the money. So it's difficult to survive and stay doing music. Were you ever stuck in that space, or was
it's been like that my whole life? You learn to navigate that space.
Mm-hmm.
No means, but a whole lot of dream.
Right.
That's normal. That's everybody's story, ain't it? That ain't even a unique story at this point. That's not special or...
Right. It's just everyday life for most people.
Everybody's story. You walk outside right now and there's somebody dreaming something and they don't have enough to get where they're trying to go. And because they don't have enough, they're going to create something else. The absence of having exactly what you necessarily need is going to force you to create something that you didn't know you needed before.
Right.
Necessity creates opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Man, all I did, that's what I did. I used my necessity and I created an opportunity.
Yeah.
So yeah, I struggled with that my whole life. I'm still struggling with that right now. You want to know what I want to build? You really want to know?
Go ahead, tell me.
I ain't going to tell you, but I'm trying to, as an example, what I really want to build, I'm light years away from that.
Right.
So I'm still working within,
okay,
within some parameters.
I'm intrigued, man. I really am. Anything can happen. Was this song, was it inspired by like a mad night on tour, or is it like a preemptive song for what you're about to build?
It's just real life. Because when you hear the words, anything can happen when you're out here popping every night. Got to risk it all trying to live a legendary life.
Mm-hmm.
Got to keep the boomy on you even when it's close friends, trying not to mix the money up with emotions.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your first conversation with Meek Mill.
What's up, fam?
How did you meet? What was the surroundings? Like, set the scene.
We met in the studio. It was a late night in L.A. I was there. He happened to be in town, too. And a studio filled with it were girls in the back, a lot of homies. It's really good energy. And Meek was working. It was me, Roddy Rich, Meek, Biggs was there, Chubbs was there. It's a lot of real niggas in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was familiar with the music, and I knew his music, and we sort of hit it off real fast. Tierra Whack was in the room too. Shout out to Tierra.
Oh, okay.
And he pulled up a beat, and he was like, "What do you think about this?" And I just went in the booth. That's how
we
met.
So this is for Anything Can Happen?
No.
There's another song with him on the project, right?
Not on this project.
Right, okay. So you've done a song, you've done a feature for him?
Well, we just worked on multiple records.
Okay. Nice. All I Want Is a Yacht. That's a banger.
You like
it? I put it on my, I do a summer mixtape every year,
mm-hmm,
and that one's in there.
I like that, a summer mixtape.
Yeah.
I fuck with it. I made it to the summer mixtape.
Had to put it in there, bro, like madness.
Thank you. What does that one feel like for you compared to the other records?
Very different, because I don't feel like the other songs are club records. Do you know what I mean? Because listen to Collection 1, and listening to something like trap, for example, right. and even the older stuff, All I Want Is Your Yacht does sound a lot different. It's a lot more, I don't really know if upbeat's the right way to say it, but it's club worthy, I guess, is just the best phrase that I can come up with right now. But like,
I think it's probably familiar enough mm-hmm. that people can keep dancing even when they don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you mean
by
club.
That's a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah, that's all it is. Uh-huh. It's in a sound bed or a sonic wave that you don't have to disrupt
it bangs.
Whatever you were doing.
It bangs. Mm-hmm. That's a good, it slaps. Mm-hmm. So it's a great song. Terrible investment.
Depending on what you invest in it.
So, yeah, but is it like a metaphor for just wanting to be stupid rich?
You can't accidentally get a yacht. Mm-hmm. They're so far outside of the bounds of what's normal or accessible. I don't want to dream in small shapes. Mm-hmm. I want a fucking yacht. So when I tell you what I want, it's going to sound like I want a whole world.
Yeah.
But I got to ask for what I want.
I feel like a yacht is something you buy when you already have the world, right?
You just want to sit on it.
And you just want to sit on it.
Pause that, actually. Like, you just want to cruise the world. Super pause. Like... But you just want to cruise, like, you, it's your world. Now you're just standing on top of it. You're just surfing it. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, a permanent surf.
How do you define success?
I think it changes every day. But for me, my definition for success doesn't change every day. Success is freedom for me. Mm-hmm. Living on your own terms, the way you designed it. And can you find happiness within that? I'm good.
Yeah. We did mention it, Trap, Lil Baby. That's the song that I feel got you out there internationally. I feel like the Russian fan base gravitated to you because of Trap.
It was Roses, actually.
Oh, it was Roses that brought it? Right, okay, yeah, okay.
It was my first record off of Collection One that I released.
So
Roses.
That was the one that really
banged
you
one.
Internationally?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
When you have a song that just propels like that and having such a big back catalogue, do you find that people jump on board and then do you notice your back catalog suddenly getting a lot of attention, or do you feel that just the one song does?
For me, it's the entire catalog.
Right.
I think some people might experience just one song mm-hmm. growing. So when people discover it at whatever interval, they want more. They got to investigate. It must be surprising that somebody is making music they care about, could have come out of nowhere that they never heard before. Mm-hmm. I see that happening a lot when someone's like, how could I have not heard of you before?
Yeah.
Well, you just weren't paying attention to me. I wasn't on your radar, and that's okay. So whatever lands on their radar, then they trace back. And it makes sense. You would do the same, right?
I did with you, actually. Yeah. And I'll be honest, bro, like, I was asleep when it came to St. John. It was Trap that caught my attention. It wasn't Roses.
Gotcha.
It was Trap was where I was like, what's this? Right. Okay, and and that's how I found Collection One. And then, because when I hear an artist, especially as a DJ, like, I want to know, like, are you loaded with a back catalog or are you a one-hit wonder?
Right.
Because this is out. And let's be real, there's plenty of one-hit wonders out there.
Yeah, you wanted
so,
to know whether
so I
want to
go
invest.
Back and I'm going to listen. So I listened to Collection One. Okay. And that's how I went back. And I listened, like, I found like 1999.
Right.
I'm like, okay, the guy's, he's got a consistency there. Like, the back catalog is there. So now suddenly I'm like, okay, well, now we need to have a conversation. Do you know what I mean? So for me, that's exactly what I do. I go back and explore. But I feel like some people do just kind of, Roses was cool, Trap was cool.
Yeah, just people
on to the next one.
People mix and match however they want. Some people go ahead and they buy the entire collection, and some people just take the pieces they feel are necessary for them.
Yeah.
That's why it's called a collection. That's why I present it in the form of a collection. It's okay. Whenever it hits you, it's going to hit you. Wherever you find it, it's going to find you. However you start, I don't care whether you start at the end. As long as you started, I'm cool with that. If you just want to take a pair of shorts, a hat, a scarf, that's cool.
Yeah.
You'll come back.
Fact is, they're wearing the garms. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to other artists for inspiration on what you want to do, or do you stay away from other people's music?
No, I think it's foolish to stay away from music or stay away from any other form of art. I think influence is important. Mm-hmm. I think managing your influences is even more important.
Explain that, managing the influences.
I think things can influence you negatively.
Okay.
Yeah. You're the sum of the parts around you. So if you have five people around you and all they do is curse, all they do is spit. All they do is shoot.
That's what you're going to do.
If you picked up a bad habit, what would it be? One of those three things, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. Your influences. It's important to manage your influences. But listen to shit. If there's new music coming out, I listen to everything. I don't give a fuck what it is. If it's bad, I'm stopping it, though. I'm turning it off. Mm-hmm. but I'm listening because I'm searching too. I'm looking for what I love. The same reason you listen to music, the same reason why you buy sneakers, the same reason why you go on dates and go look for food, the same reason as anybody else does it. I'm in that mind state constantly. So I'm looking for the greatest thing on planet Earth. I'm looking for anybody better than me.
So you can be better than them?
Yeah.
White parents are going to hate this. Yeah. So is this coming? Yeah. Is this song on the new collection?
No, it's not on the summer collection.
So it's a standalone record. It got my attention straight away because of the title. Mm-hmm. So can you just explain why is it called White Parents Are Going to Hate This?
That's how I felt when I heard it. It was so aggressive. It was so ignorant.
Right.
That's just how I felt.
Okay.
I don't overthink things that I believe. Now I have to. I already believe them. Mm-hmm. So when I made the record, how much drugs do you take? Because I imagine if like Timmy's mom walks in his room and he's 9 years old and she catches him with his speaker turned all the way up.
Yeah.
And he's on Triller and he's listening to White Parents Are Gonna Hate This, making a video, and she hears him saying, "How much drugs can you take tonight?"
Yeah.
Tonight. What would you tell Timmy, your little 9-year old?
Yeah, he's
you
in trouble.
That record. Absolutely not. You can't do this. This can't be the way I didn't raise you to be like this, Timmy. In that scenario, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Yeah. I wanted to put it to the test. So I sent it to my mom.
Wow.
Right. Now my mom's not a stranger to hip hop.
Right.
She loves Future.
Oh, Future's wavy.
So bizarre. It's very random. But I asked her to voice note me her reaction. Uh-huh. I haven't heard this yet.
All right, let's hear this.
Are you ready for a reaction? This could go either way. This could be, this could be the
white.
End of the interview straight away,
mom.
You know.
Let's go.
Let's see what she's saying.
I've just listened to the record that you sent me, the link that you sent me. I think the title's incredibly accurate. I suspect it's probably true. Some aspects of it I liked the rhythm and the riffs underneath, but his rapping wasn't very clear, apart from some which were incredibly clear, and that was all the sweary bits. The language was appalling. He's not as good as Stormzy, am I allowed to say that? Other rappers that I like better, other than Stormzy. Message wasn't clear because I couldn't understand what he was saying. Okay?
It makes sense, right?
It does make sense. So I guess the verdict is, you're not a liar.
White parents.
Well, no, actually, she didn't say she hated it, but she did say you weren't as good as Stormzy. Do you know? Are you aware of Stormzy?
Of course, for good. Sure.
I like that. So, I guess, yeah.
That's mom's review. So it's accurate. It's spot on. Mom's white parents are gonna hate this. White it makes parents. Sense. Listen, everything she just said. How old, yeah, like it don't even matter. Your mom is from a completely different generation, right?
Yeah.
So the way she consumes music, the way she lives, the way she socially operates,
yeah,
the way she interacts with culture, it don't matter whether she likes rap music or not.
Yeah.
It makes sense that this wouldn't be something that
it wouldn't connect with her.
Of course it wouldn't.
But she does like the riffs and she likes the beat.
Yeah. So because she likes the musical components of it.
Yeah.
She likes everything sonically. If she didn't speak the language, if she never spoke a lick of English, she would just be like, I like how that sounds.
Yeah.
It's the reason why my music sounds the way it does. Because on the top layer, you can just like how it sounds.
Yeah.
She don't know what the fuck I'm saying. And she investigated. She go, whoa, that's a truth? You can't ignore a truth. You can't call a truth a lie.
Yeah.
You can't dislike a truth.
Uh-huh.
All you can do is ignore it. It's not your truth and you turn away.
Right.
So it makes sense.
There you go.
And spot on.
So in the next collection, is there going to be one? White parents are going to love this song.
I think.
You've got the pointers now. All you need is a Stormzy feature.
Oh, jeez.
Talking of features, like your catalog is not feature heavy.
No.
You've got Lil Baby. You've got Meek Mill. Like there's a couple along the way. And I feel like your relationship with Biggs opens up so many doors where you could call on massive features if you wanted to. But it feels like you don't feel the need to.
I don't think that's important.
Right.
I just make the music based on the way I hear it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So if a song is incomplete and I think it's incomplete because I imagine a voice on it or I imagine a specific identity on it, then I'm gonna make a phone call.
Yeah.
And my relationship with Biggs opens up the world tremendously. But I'm the same nigga I've been.
Right.
That means all the things I wanted then are the same things that I wanted now.
Mm-hmm.
That means if I'm not an oversaturated guy then, I'm not an oversaturated guy now. That means if I'm selective then, I'm selective now.
Who would be your ultimate collaboration? So like dead or alive, anybody ever, who would you want to do a record with?
I can't say ultimate. I never fascinated about a collaboration that would make me feel complete. I didn't have that.
Right.
There was no name on a wall that if I did this, it would mean this. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that. Listen, my hope is that when I make a record and I imagine whoever the wildest voice on it, I'd be hopeful if they pick up the phone and they do right. the song because it's a great song.
So there's not one specific name on it. There's not one person that you'd be like, that would be amazing.
Here's one thing that's a no-brainer. All my good friends call me Ghetto Lenny. Imagine if Ghetto Lenny and Lenny did a record.
Right, okay.
That'd be nuts, right?
Yeah. Lenny Kravitz then.
That'd be wild.
Nice. You managed to achieve what a lot of people would count as their ultimate collaboration this year with Beyonce.
Yeah.
And obviously you mentioned earlier about Roses being like an unused Beyonce record, but Brown Skin Girl, incredible, man. Like, incredible piece of work. That whole process, was that made in like a session all together, or was it a reference track that you sent over? Like, talk to me about making the track.
Sorry to cut you off. It took a couple steps. It started in Jamaica, and then it got finished in LA.
Okay.
So the idea as it stands, all of it started in Jamaica. I was in Jamaica working on records. And
by yourself or with Beyonce?
Beyonce wasn't there.
Right.
So she heard the record and she graduated it.
Okay.
She made it even better.
Right.
But the idea started in Jamaica.
When you made it, were you aware you were making a record potentially for Beyonce? Or were you just making a record?
I was never making a record for Beyonce.
So you literally...
I stopped doing that.
You just started making Brown Skin Girl and then it got to Beyonce's eardrums and the rest has become history.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love that you are a feature on the track. As opposed to just credited as a writer, like.
I'm featured on a track, though.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
It's really good. And obviously, it's going to do wonders for you reaching new audiences as well and gravitating them towards the new project. August 23rd. Get Eleni's love songs. So, will you continue to write for artists? Because it seems to me like there's a certain element of risk as a songwriter when you're a solo artist as well. Because what will happen is... exactly what I've just done, people are going to ask you about writing for Beyonce. Mm. And that's going to take up airtime when we could be talking about Ghetto Lenny's love songs. Does that make sense? So like, will you continue to write for other artists or is it going to be pulled back to your own stuff and then kind of keeping all the good stuff for yourself?
Let me ask you a question and you'll help me answer this. Mm-hmm. Were we talking last year? Were you talking about me? So what does it matter as long as we're talking?
There you go, if you're in the conversation. You've played the long game with music, and like there's a phrase that I've used so many times with people I sit down with, and the phrase is that it takes 10 years to blow up overnight. And like
I could take 10 years. That's the rule of thumb, 10 years, 10,000 hours, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how true is that. I know time is important.
Have there been any times along the way where you were just like, it's not working out, I want to give up?
I've never wanted to give up, but it's not working out for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what would you do when you reach those times? Like when you reach that obstacle, like what happens next? How do you keep the motivation and keep the momentum to keep going?
You got to make adjustments. What most people do is they hit their head against a wall and they never choose to switch what spot they're hitting their head against the wall. They just imagine they're just going to keep hitting the same spot and one day the wall is going to crumble, right? Having self-awareness and a little bit of intellect, enough to go, whoa, that hurt. And that spot ain't weak. You got to keep hitting different parts of the wall. Mm-hmm. In a super metaphorical way, all that shit meant was growing in real time.
Right.
Learning what doesn't work. Right. Just because you believe something doesn't mean you got to ignore what doesn't fucking work.
Right. Yeah.
Belief shouldn't be blind. Right. Mm-hmm. It should be faith induced, but not blind. You can look around. There's evidence to certain things that are really simple.
Yeah.
I paid attention. When something ain't work, I had to look at myself. I had to deal with my own ego because that's the problem. Most artists have an ego they don't want to address. You make a mistake, it's fucking hard to tell yourself it was your fault. How many people you know are willing to raise their hand and say, damn, I fucked that up?
Yeah.
That was the first thing I had to, that was the first hurdle. Raising my hand and being like, all right, cool. That ain't good enough. I believe, but I wasn't good enough yet. I'm not ready for that opportunity.
What's the goal for you? Like, ultimately, at the end of it all, and you look back at St. John, what do you want to see?
I hope I would have changed the culture and fixed all the things that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm. Hip-hop and culture, like American culture.
Black culture, music culture.
Okay.
And at this point, black culture is just world culture.
Mm-hmm.
Black music is just world music at this point. Hip-hop ain't even just black music, it's just world music.
Yeah.
I'm born from that. So I say it because I want you to know where I come from. So I'd hope that by the end of this, looking back, I would have made so many changes and had such an incredible impact. The music sounds better, opportunities greater, and I would have fed my family tenfold. And I'd have left a legacy of something that matters.
Incredible, bro. So get Eleni's Love Songs.
Get Eleni's Love Songs.
August 23rd.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the collection? We're not calling it an album. It's not
a collection.
It's not a playlist. It's not a mixtape.
No.
It's a collection.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add that I didn't cover?
No, it's just my summer collection. I hope you like it.
Amazing. DJ Double here with St. John.
Boom.